Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Slowly and surely, the partisan rancor from recent years is losing its appeal.
Mary Peltola praises the state's reputation for bipartisan work in her first address to Alaska's legislature. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 17th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, some lawmakers remain wary as the governor's budget amendments seek to address the state's food stamp backlog.
We'll just have to see how it plays out. And it still begs the question of how we got here.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's 3 universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
An Amber Alert has been issued for the abduction of an 8-month-old infant in Anchorage. State emergency officials say Amiri Cheney was last seen near the intersection of Norman Street and East 12th Avenue. Officials named Amiri's father, 23-year-old Eric Cheney Jr., as a suspect in Amiri's abduction. Anchorage police say officers responded to a possible homicide at the same address just before 9 a.m. today. When they arrived, officers say they found a dead woman. Police say they couldn't find Amiri, who lived at the home. Anchorage police ask the public to call 911 if they have information on Amiri's location. They also advise the public not to approach the suspect. Governor Mike Dunleavy added $9 million to his budget this week to address a backlog in the Division of Public Assistance that's left thousands of Alaskans waiting for food stamps and Medicaid. Claire Strempel reports for KTOO.
At a press conference on Wednesday, Dunleavy said the money will be spent on hiring contract workers to help state employees get through the food stamp backlog so they're prepared for upcoming Medicaid recertifications. There's also $54 million in the capital budget for improved computer systems in the division. Democratic Representative Andy Josephson says he fought staff cuts to the Division of Public Assistance last session. Now he credits the governor with being responsive to the crisis.
We'll just have to see how it plays out. And it still begs the question of how we got here. And I think that there are many questions that remain about that.
Minority Leader Calvin Schragi says he thinks the contract workers and additional funding will address the food stamp backlog and get benefits to Alaskans. But he has some concerns.
Are these temporary workers going to be kept on? Are they replacing state employees? That's one concern. And also, we've heard reports that some of this is a result of understaffing in prior years. And so making sure that we have adequate staffing moving forward, that this isn't just a one-time boost to get past a difficult decision and then go back to, you know, slow or dysfunctional service.
Department of Health Commissioner Heidi Hedberg says the contract workers are in place because the division does not need more permanent staff.
We're going to always continue to reevaluate, but we believe that our permanent positions are sufficient.
But the union that represents state workers disagrees. It rallied on the Capitol steps last week to ask for more staff for the division. It's filed a grievance against the state because it says the contract labor violates its collective bargaining agreement. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
Alaska is slated to get $285 million from the federal government to modernize the state's ferry fleet and improve service. It's part of the bipartisan infrastructure law passed in 2021. But to actually spend the windfall, the state needs to put up money too. And that's a hard request in a state that's facing a deficit amid falling oil revenue. So, as Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, the state is turning to an obscure accounting quirk to turn old federal funds into new ones.
The $285 million federal windfall is a boon to the state's ferry system. Catherine Keith is the deputy commissioner for the state's Department of Transportation. She told the state's Marine Highway Operations Board earlier this month that the federal grants would inject some life into the marine highway system.
Modernize our vessels, begin designing some new builds, construction of new builds, and then also reinvesting in some of our ferry terminal facilities so that we can get closer to running all ships in all docks. And then finally, providing the marine highway system with some operating funds.
But the grants aren't free money. Each of the six grants requires a match from the state, between 25% and 50%. Ferry board member Juanetta Ayers said she was worried about the state prioritizing the matching funds.
The reality is we're in a deficit budget situation under certain circumstances, and that puts pressure on cash available for match.
Ferry boosters might have a reason to be skeptical. During his first term, Governor Mike Dunleavy cut millions from the ferry system's budget and sold off three state ferries. But in a state budget amendment submitted this month, Dunleavy's administration proposed a solution. DOT Commissioner Ryan Anderson says the state needs almost $50 million in matching funds for this year's ferry grants, and he's got an idea for where to get it.
To meet this requirement, the state is proposing to use an innovative federal aid highway tool that allows the state to use existing federal dollars to capture these new federal dollars.
Turning old federal money into lots and lots of new federal money. It's not alchemy, it's accounting. The secret here are so-called toll match credits. Think of it this way. The marine highway system is part of the federal highway system. And if you think about ferry tickets as tolls, it's not just a highway, it's a toll road. And those toll revenues are at least partly invested in maintaining the ferry fleet and its network of terminals. Toll match credits allow that maintenance spending to count towards the state's portion of the match. The federal grants break down like this. About $68 million towards a hybrid diesel-electric replacement for the ferry Tustamina. That project is already underway. There's also about $8.5 million to design a new mainliner for Southeast. Another $164 million would go towards a new electric ferry, as well as upgrades to the system's dock infrastructure and modernizing the existing vessels. The $285 million package also includes nearly $45 million for operating funds. Reporting for Coast Alaska in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Representative Mary Peltola returned to Juneau this morning to make her first address to state lawmakers since becoming the only Alaska Native person elected to the U.S. House. Peltola is a moderate Democrat. Bipartisanship is her motto. And this speech was on brand. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Ladies and gentlemen, the U.S. Representative for the great state of Alaska, the Honorable Mary Sadler Peltola.
Peltola says her new colleagues in Congress sometimes ask her about the Alaska model. She was happy to learn they were referring to the state legislature's long experience with bipartisan coalition leadership.
I think people ask me about this Alaska model because they realize that business as usual in D.C. isn't working anymore. Slowly and surely, the partisan rancor from recent years is losing its appeal. People are remembering that politics, first and foremost, should be about fixing things and not just launching cable news careers or racking up retweets.
Peltola's predecessor, the late Congressman Don Young, always declined the invitation to address the legislature. Peltola was largely unknown in the state when she filed to run for his seat last year. For her, the speech was an opportunity to shape the image she wants to convey statewide as the newest member of the state's congressional delegation. She kept it to 16 minutes, much shorter than the U.S. senators usually run, and devoted a lot of that time to the value of working across the aisle. She passed along wisdom she said she learned from former Alaska House Speaker Ben Grusendorf when he was negotiating the final finance package of the year.
There were people who wanted, you know, revenge, you know, these end of session deals. And he said, no, everybody has to save face. And I think that's a real valuable lesson that was it really stuck with me as a legislator.
Peltola represented Bethel in the State House for a decade, starting in 1999. She helped revive the Bush Caucus, a bloc of legislators that pressed for the needs of rural Alaska. Peltola is also credited with establishing Cuspuck Fridays. Legislators and staff in the state capitol still wear cuspucks, cotton hooded jackets with front pockets, to mark the end of the work week and give a nod to the native people of western Alaska, where cuspucks originate. After her speech, Peltola told reporters she'd rather be remembered in Juneau for more significant deeds, but she said she's come to appreciate that Cuspuck Fridays have helped change the culture of the capital and made rural residents feel welcome.
I've heard stories of people who were scared and terrified to be here and then felt a lot more comfortable when they saw that everyone had their cuspuck on. So I'm thrilled that the tradition continues and to have been a part of it.
Peltola's speech this year comes between those of the senators. Dan Sullivan spoke last week. Lisa Murkowski's will be on February 22. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, difficult decisions as Tuluksac passes a week without running water.
We're trying our best to conserve water where we can, but we're making choices that we shouldn't be having to make in the schools.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
In rural Alaska communities, village public safety officers make a difference every day. Hired regionally, VPSOs are trained in public safety services such as community policing, fire prevention, life-saving emergency medical response, and search and rescue. VPSO receive competitive pay, benefits, and opportunities for advancement. To start your career in public safety and learn more about becoming a VPSO, go to vpso.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by VPSO.
After a week without running water, administrators in Tuluksac say they are on the verge of closing the village's school. Principal Carrie Delsignor says last Thursday night, a line leading from the water plant broke, leaving the school and all of the teacher housing without running water. There's a temporary workaround, but it requires trucking a 200-gallon plastic container back and forth from the water plant to the school, and they're able to get just a fraction of the water they'd normally use.
We're trying our best to conserve water where we can, but we're making choices that we shouldn't be having to make in the schools. Pulling out the honey buckets, doing things like that, having to choose, you know, will we feed you today? Will you be able to wash your hands? What can we do? Can we provide you with drinking water? Or no, we don't have any drinking water right now that's safe for you in the school.
Delsignor says the lack of water is making it difficult to cook food in a clean environment, and it's putting the health and safety of children and staff at risk.
Our teachers are they're working on their weekends to help pump water. They're working in the evening to help pump water.
Then those teachers head home to honey buckets and cold showers. Delsignor says they are exhausted.
It's just become very, very difficult, and we are in need of some assistance from the state.
Delsignor and the Upiat School District Superintendent Scott Bowlard says they reached out to Bethel Senator Lyman Hoffman and the Commissioner of the Department of Education. They say they were told someone was going to reach out to the governor. But in the meantime, Bowlard says they may not be able to keep the school open.
If all of our teachers are so exhausted and so frustrated without even being able to maintain basic personal hygiene, and they're going to leave, and we won't have school. And that's when the decision will be made, when we have teachers that say, we're not going to stay here under these conditions.
Tuluksac has struggled to get potable water to people in recent years. A fire destroyed its water plant in 2021. The community had to rely on donations of bottled water or on the nearby Tuluksac and Kuskokwim rivers until a temporary plant was installed later that year. A new land planning group based in Nikiski is getting pushback from a Native village and corporation on the other side of Cook Inlet that say they don't want to be a part of it. KDLL's Riley Board has more on the borough's largest advisory planning commission and the effort to make it smaller.
Advisory planning commissions, or APCs, provide an avenue for residents to weigh in on land use decisions in their communities. Nikiski didn't have one until last fall, when residents proposed an APC that encompassed millions of acres on the opposite west side of Cook Inlet, including the native village of Tyonek, making the area 10 times larger than any other borough APC. The assembly sided with the residents and approved the large map, even after the borough's planning department suggested keeping the map to just the east side. Absent from those discussions were residents of Tyonek, That was until October, when the Assembly received a letter on behalf of the remote community signed by the Native Village President Johann Bartels and Native Corporation CEO Stephen Piskoski.
So I think this is an inappropriate representation.
Piskoski says the commission, as is, does not represent the community. None of the 7 members of the APC today are from Tyonek, and none of the nearly 50 signatures on the original petition were from full-time West Side residents.
You know, when I look at the land that's represented in the APC, 75 to 90% of the land is on the West Side. But again, 100% of the people petitioning and sitting on the APC are from Kenai or Nikiski.
Robert Ruffner is the borough's planning director. He says this is the first time he's seen a community within an APC ask to withdraw. But he says it's also the first time the boundaries of a proposed APC haven't exactly followed the outline of a unified community, a factor in determining the boundaries of a commission.
The advisory planning commissions previously have been pretty focused around a community that is really pretty unified in their self-determination.
Tyonek's letter spurred a reconsideration of the larger boundaries at last week's borough assembly meeting, and residents of Nikiski showed up to defend the map, as is.
East side, west side, you know, in the Cook Inlet, it's all interconnected in a way that you can't dissect it and rip it apart without ripping apart the entire community. And just because a small portion of group of people don't want to be a part of it doesn't mean we need to cut out the whole rest of it.
That's Jason Ross, chair of the Nikiski APC. Several speakers characterized the West Side as Nikiski's backyard and a recreation area for Nikiski residents. One petitioner talked about owning a hunting lodge on the West Side and spending time hunting there. Some, like Lenora Neeson, also pointed out the ways that Nikiski and Tyonek are connected through the oil industry.
When you think of Nikiski, you think of oil and gas. It's what we're about, and everything that has to do with that affects Nikiski. And it was distressing to me when I saw that this ordinance cuts us off at the shoreline.
Ruffner, the planning director, says an APC will occasionally weigh in on items related to the oil and gas industry, like approving permits for pipelines or gravel pits. But he says many industry-related projects are not greenlit at that level. The assembly was split on whether to make the map smaller, and will reconsider the boundaries at its next meeting on February 21st. Piskoski, with the Native Corporation, was disappointed in the outcome of the vote. He says he still strongly supports reducing the size of the APC and rejects the claim that there is a cultural and historical link between Tyonek and Nikiski, or that the West Side falls in Nikiski's, quote, cone of influence. And he says, while the area may be a vacation spot for Nikiski residents, it's where people from Tyonek have been subsistence hunting and fishing for hundreds of years.
People from the East Side vacation and recreate, they hunt, they fish on the West Side. Well, that's great, but that doesn't give you a right to start to form legislative concepts and ideas for an area where you recreate.
Piskoski says, for the most part, people who reside in Tyonek still don't know much about the APC. But he says a grassroots effort to protest the West Side inclusion in the APC is forming, and says the Borough Assembly can expect letters and testimony from Tyonek residents ahead of Tuesday's meeting. Dozens of Tyonek residents and several Native entities have already submitted letters in support. On the Kenai Peninsula, I'm Riley Board.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
Are you an Alaska artist or do you know one? March 1st is the deadline to apply for a Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Award. The program provides awards to artists, musicians, performers, writers, and culture bearers. Amounts are increasing. A project award, now $10,000, is available for an Alaska artist at any career stage. Mid-career and established artists may apply for a $25,000 artist fellowship. Learn more at Rasmussen.org. Rasmussen Foundation, promoting a better life for all Alaskans. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Each year on February 16th, the Alaska Native Sisterhood in Juneau celebrates the anniversary of the passing of Alaska's Anti-Discrimination Act by visiting Elizabeth Paratrovich's final resting place and then rallying in her honor at the state capitol. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has the story.
About a dozen people are gathered at Juneau's Evergreen Cemetery, circled around the graves of Elizabeth and Roy Paratrovich. Jamie Ann Saethin Hasselquist with the Alaska Native Sisterhood was here yesterday to shovel away the snow. Now, wearing her blue and white hat and sash, she lays flowers at the graves. She says Paratrovich's work was instrumental in passing the state's Anti-Discrimination Act in 1945. That life is different for Alaska Native people today.
Like I said this morning, we all have workplaces. We all can go into restaurants. We all can speak our language. And we're all walking in the legacy of Elizabeth and her spirit. And so the intention today was to come together and let people speak.
Paratrovich is credited with being the force that turned the favor of the legislature toward the Anti-Discrimination Act, by challenging Alaska legislators who were against the bill. Peter Nerose is with the Alaska Native Brotherhood.
So when a brave person is standing in front of a maybe not so brave senator and calling him to task, that's what happened. We're proud of her.
Later at the Capitol steps, children, legislators, and elders gather in the rain for a rally.
Some of you are holding signs, signs of important topics. But we don't just see you as holding a sign. We see you moving in the spirit of Elizabeth. You are using your most powerful tools, your voice and your presence.
Shosh Kwan Raven Svensson is here with the University of Alaska Southeast student group Wuch'in. Her sign says, Ethnein Gunetjish Kachgal At, giving thanks and using Paratrovich's Tlingit name.
And just being very grateful for the effect that all of that work has done for us today, and the freedoms that I get to enjoy because she stood up for it.
Almaria Alcantara works in tribal advocacy.
Far too often, Indigenous people are left out of the picture, but we're here and we've been here and we're not going anywhere.
Other students say Paratrovich inspires them to do the work they do, like language revitalization efforts, advocacy for Alaska Native rights in legislation, and making room for Indigenous students in academia. Part of that legacy is advocating for civil rights now, they say. Their signs ask lawmakers to support mental health program funding in schools and increased insurance coverage of contraceptives. They're also opposed to a bill that would limit school sports based on students' gender assigned at birth. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
Bethel has all of the signs of winter this time of year. It's dark and cold, and with a blizzard warning looming, there are kids playing outside. KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello brings us this story of two young men learning some age-old snow science.
It's Friday afternoon, the 10th of February. The forecast called for heavy snow in Bethel, with temperatures reaching 10 below. Two teenagers are passing the time outside after school, building igloos near the dorms of the Utlit Noriat Learning Center. It's a study in engineering, architecture, and history. Ignatius Hunter is a 17-year-old senior from Quinnahawk. Tom Jimmy is a 16-year-old freshman from Nunavichuk. Both are students at KLA, the Kuskokwim Learning Academy. Let's walk with them.
Hi, my name is Ignatius Hunter.
Hi, my name is Tom Jimmy. We started building it on Friday and then continued today, rebuilt it. After it almost fell on us, we started to think it over and rebuilt the whole thing.
Yeah, it was pretty tough just putting it all back together. Good. But yeah, we did it.
We decided to build an igloo with all the parts. We saw all those chunks of snow that hardened. When they were holding up fine, we decided to make one.
Yeah, like something to do. or something to do better than staying inside?
The first one we built can only fit 3 people. Kind of small, but it's still good.
Yeah, it's like Tala is 5'7", and the second igloo we built, it's like can fit like 5 people now.
That's done. And it's much more harder and bigger pieces, and had to be more careful with what we had to put down on the sides. This is my second time building an igloo, second time experience how to build one. And then the first time we built one was small, cramped, but still it held up.
Yeah, this is my first experience. This is like the coolest thing ever, like how it looks because of the sun inside.
Oh. Yesterday we were out 3 hours in the wind and all that snow that was blowing. Kind of hard to stay good when we were building in those windy and snowy weather.
Yeah, it was pretty cold outside, like really windy and cold. And yeah, and then until today it was really pretty good out.
I think we're just gonna chill in here and talk. If someone's having a bad day, just tell them to come out here.
Yeah, it's like peace and quiet in here. It's like something to do, like how cool it is to see in here.
The lighting at night would be pretty great, seeing all the light going in through the walls.
Yeah. The colors you can see really pretty, like you can see them moving around like through the cracks in the walls.
It seems like mostly we're self-taught about building igloos and seeing how those pieces go together, make them fit. We used a shovel and a knife to smoothen the edges out and making them fit.
And our shades just to keep the snow out of our eyes. If all the pieces fall back together, we all can put them all back together by helping each other.
And then use another piece to cover the entrance so the cold will not go in. Yesterday we worked for 3 to 4 hours. When we started to getting tired and cold, we went inside to have coffee and warm up a bit. After we got warm enough, we came back out and started building again.
Yeah, we had it. Like when we get cold, we'd always go in back inside and quickly eat something for something to get more better and no more laziness. My name is Ignatius Hunter, and thank you for joining us.
My name is Tom Jimmy, and thank you for joining us when we built the igloo.
Inside an Igloo by the Ute Dorms in Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Wesley Early and Liz Ruskin in Anchorage, Claire Strempel and Yvonne Crumry in Juneau, Angela Denny in Petersburg, Riley Board on the Kenai Peninsula, and Rasha McChesney reporting for KYUK in Bethel, and Francisco Martinez Cuello reporting from inside an igloo in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Madeline Rose is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Parents go to great lengths to protect their little ones. When it comes to protection from childhood diseases, go with the safest, most effective choice. Start strong by getting all recommended vaccines for your baby by age 2. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. That's vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.